Good evening and welcome to the Métis Voices radio show as we play the introduction, a rendition of the Red River Jig by the Métis Toe Tappers. Now this is our own internet radio program at BBS Radio every Friday evening, 7:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Station 2, featuring a variety of subjects and special guests each week. From the Machif Métis Museum in beautiful Vavenby, B.C., Canada, with your host, Dale Haggerty. Call-in lines are now open as well as a chat feature for your questions and comments. Here are the numbers to call. In the U.S. and Canada, toll-free, 888-228-4494. And worldwide, toll-free, 877-489-6350. For direct lines, go to the www.bbsradio.com, BBS Station 2, right-hand side. And don't worry if you miss any of these call-in numbers. They are posted on the BBS Radio website. Those who wish to enter the chat rooms, please go to the home page, column on the left, How to Listen, then Chat Live. BBS My Chat Rooms, choose the drop-down menu, select the chat room, Chatter Hall, sign in if already registered or register if not. And now, your host, Dale Haggerty. Welcome, everyone. No, this is not a mistake. Don't turn up your volume. Dale's voice hasn't gone up several octaves. He's happily in Kelowna, beginning a 12-session instructor's course. So I'm going to do the visiting with our guests this evening, and possibly more evenings. Sort of like a tag team effort. Or we'll play the odd archive from past shows from time to time while he has to be away. Now, having said all that, it is the eve before the Métis Nation of BC election, which will be held tomorrow, Saturday, September 13th. And so tonight, once again, I have the privilege and pleasure to introduce to you candidate for President of the Métis Nation in BC, our guest and very good friend, Earl Belcourt. Hi, Earl.
Hello there. How are you, Dale?
Good. Glad to have you here. How are you this evening? You must be excited.
Well, I didn't think I was going to be all that excited, but I can tell you I'm certainly starting to be. I don't think I'll be able to sleep tonight, but I'm going to work on it anyway.
Oh, good. Listen, Earl, I'd like to ask you right off the bat, what do you want to see as changes for the Métis people in regards to Métis citizenship, Métis rights, and equal rights if you are elected?
Holy moly, that's a lot of questions. I don't think I'll be able to answer completely right off the hop here because those are very, very important questions, but I can certainly try if you can allow me the time.
Sure, just go for it, Earl. I'll drink my tea while you're talking.
Holy moly. Okay, I'll do what I can.
All right.
Let's start with, I suppose, the citizenship. To date, from what I understand, we have roughly 5,000 Métis people registered out of roughly 60,000 according to the 2000 census. But, since the MNBC has kept us dependent on government funds, they will be, looking at the numbers. Eventually, they will give the MNBC, what's proportionate to those numbers. You know, we may not be getting our 12 or 13 million in the future. That's what I guess is going to be our problem, our biggest dilemma. The MNBC claim to represent the 60,000 Métis, but they don't know who these people are. Funny thing about that, though, is that they know who they are, and they're not telling. So I don't know what we're going to do about that. I don't blame anyone for that, for keeping their identity to themselves, because I've always said that an MNBC card does not make me a Métis, and I'm sure those people are thinking the same way. But having said that, I know who I am, and the MNBC needs more than we need the MNBC. Like, they need us more than we need them. And, you know, there should be more respect, in my view, to the people themselves. After all, the elected officials work for the people. We don't work for them. And if I'm president, I certainly intend to use that as my philosophy.
Good. Sounds good.
Anyway, having said that, those that hold a card, I believe anyway, have it because they want to build a nation and not a club. And certainly, you know, we have the Homeland Métis as per the MNBC definition, but it goes further than that, in my view anyway. No one can tell me that, you know, that our ancestors dropped down from the sky in order to bypass the East Coast. And my grandfather was considered a Quebec Métis. He moved to Manitoba in the early 1900s and married a prairie girl. And where did she come from? She came from Quebec. And her ancestors came from the Métis movement in the 1800s, and they were from Quebec, and before that they were from France, so I don't understand the situation. But anyway, they were Métis before they moved west, and before that they probably just landed in Halifax and, or, you know, Quebec, who knows, eh?
Yeah,
I have to look into that. Anyway, and that's as far as I'm going to go with the Métis citizenship, but, you know, I could go further, but I know we won't have that much time. There might be some people wanting to ask questions. But I'll go on the Métis rights now. That's another issue, and it's a strong one. You know, I don't know how many people know it, but Saskatchewan is the only province in Canada that has a Métis Act in the legislature, in the Saskatchewan legislature. This year, a couple of Métis and I approached the MNBC to adopt the Saskatchewan Act for British Columbia. And the reason for that is, you know, we're the same Métis as they are in the prairies, because we're basically all from there. And, you know, and same as in the rest of the country. So why change something that's working?
That's true.
You know, and besides that, the government would favor an act that's already in place and working for them, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, the MNBC refused, saying that they were getting along quite well with the government, so why rock the boat? So that wasn't good enough an answer for us, so we went ahead with it. I approached the NDP member of the Legislative Assembly of my riding, who's John Horgan, and asked him to champion this act for us, and he agreed. So that was the beginning. It would have been read, you know, in Victoria there in this past May, but the Liberal Party of BC had their own agenda, and since they have the majority in Parliament, they refused the NDP to read any acts. So having, and then, of course, now, Mr. Morgan was to read it this month because they have a fall sitting. But the Liberals have decided to run this government on their own again and not have a fall sitting at all. So, you know, so at this point in time, I don't know when it's going to be read, but I do know that Mr. Horgan and the NDP party are certainly going to be doing that very soon now. That act, you know, would give us the beginning, not unlike our constitution, whereby we can either add or subtract as we go along, and that isn't difficult to do once something is in place, same as our constitution. But we've got to start someplace. Instead of talking about it, you know, we've got to act. So my next step, of course, if this is put through, will be to go to the governance, the people of British Columbia, and ask them what they want to change and how they want to change it, et cetera, et cetera. But we have to start someplace. And in my view, I can't sit around and wait for people that don't want to do anything. So that's I know that's maybe a bit hard-nosed, but I do get tired of waiting, so I got to do what I feel is right for everybody in general. I don't know what makes me think that, but that's just the way I am. Mm-hmm. And my next step after that will be a Métis Act passed in Ottawa. That'll be my next step. Whether the MNC is interested or not, I doubt it very much. But then again, I could be wrong. I know that they've been working at an act for a long time. As a matter of fact, it was Clem Chartier that passed the act in Saskatchewan. So I'm sure, I'm almost positive that, you know, he'd be open to that. But I don't know. We got to discuss the fact of the other Métis as well. I mean, not the other Métis saying just because you're mixed, you're Métis. That's not true. You know, the ones that are mixed, for example, here on the island that are born here and they're a part of Cowichan or whatever the case may be, those are non-status. They're not Métis people. I know that in the dictionary it says Métis mixed blood, but there's a difference. And we know what that is. So.
Yeah.
And as far as the equal rights are concerned, you can ask any chief, you know, and they'll tell you that the Indian Act is discriminatory towards them. And if you think about it, it discriminates against us too. I believe, anyway, we should have, for all it's worth, we should have the same rights as the First Nations, because history shows us that we're all part of the same people.
Yeah.
Our ancestors were just out hunting, and besides, our ancestors didn't want status. They'd be stuck in a reserve, and they were free. They were out to Punsawak, eh? Free people, and we're still free to this day. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't have the same rights as the Indians. Anyway, and the Constitution of Canada is quite clear that there are three Aboriginal peoples in Canada. You know, the First Nations, the Métis, and the Inuit. So therefore, how can that be that they have different rights than we do?
Yeah, that's true.
And just to touch on that, my son and I have been challenging the Indian Act since 1996. We believe that if a Métis is working on a reserve, that particular Métis person should be as tax exempt as the Indians are that are working on the reserve. The MNBC know that we have been in the courts since for 12 years now and have never offered to assist. My son and I have fought on our own, and yet they are now saying that we should have equal rights, but they've never said it before. At least now they're talking about it, which is a good thing, and I'm happy for that. I'm thinking that maybe, though it's only an election talk, I don't know, and I'm hoping I'm wrong, but that's just the way things work. And there's your answer. I hope that's sufficient.
Yeah, a lot of things are said before elections, right? But whether or not they're carried through, that's another matter.
Well, I hope so. I know it was discussed at the forum, especially in Victoria, and it was done, where was it now? I can't remember the other forum anyway. But anyway, it was discussed a couple of times. They brought it up, Bruce brought it up. And I believe he'd be working towards that. I really don't know, though. I know I would. I know I'm already working towards it. So if I'm president, you don't have to worry about that, because it's already been in the works with me for years. So it's going to happen.
Good. Earl, can you tell us more about plans for economic development and self-sufficiency for the Métis Nation?
Well, the economic development, I don't really have a plan at this particular time. When I was vice president in 2000, we had what was called the MEDCO, Métis Economic Development Corporation, and I was the chair of that. As a matter of fact, the MNBC lawyer, Joe Gerlich, was the lawyer for that corporation, and his wife, Pat, was our accountant. So all the funds were on the up and up. There was no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had received funds from the Privy Council. As a matter of fact, I was the only director at that particular time that received any funds from any government agency. And they had given us dollars to set up an Aboriginal Apprenticeship Board. What I had done at the time was I had a Métis person representing their province from every province in British Columbia on that board. I'm sorry, not British Columbia, but the five governing bodies up to Ontario, of course. And the intent was to have someone represent the provinces across the rest of the country. But for some reason or other, I guess the MNBC didn't, or the MNC and the MNBC at the time, didn't like what was going on, and that was, the kibosh was put on that. And not to mention, I've never even heard of MEDCO anymore. It's almost like just vanished. But the economic development portion of things is very important, simply because if we don't do economic development, we'll have our hands out to the government forever and ever, and sooner or later. And I can assure you that sooner or later, we are not going to be getting funds. I mean, it's been discussed in government many times. I know we have the right, but you can only get so much money from the government, and millions and millions and hundreds of millions of dollars have been going to us in the past, I don't know how long, maybe 20 years, 25 years, who knows. But sooner or later, that's going to stop. So the economic development plan, I have not sure yet. I have to sit down and look at what's been happening, but certainly the companies have to come on board. And before we have, before we have companies that are really interested in us, it will be only, I think, I'm thinking now, that I'm just brainwaving, that we need some land base first. For example, if we have a whole bunch of money, why can't we buy some land or find some place that land is fairly cheap? I know Dawson Creek, Pouskoupi, and all them places, that's still a Métis country. And if I'm not mistaken, it's still under script.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least it's supposed to be under script. You know, John A. MacDonald, when he told the parliament in Ottawa there that don't worry about the Métis, they're going to be gone in 10 years anyway, well, they all believed him in British Columbia, and they didn't distinguish that script. It's still there. They tried to distinguish it on the prairies, but up there, it's still there. It's still written in writing. So I don't know what we could do, but certainly I know we can do something if we work at it. The self-sufficiency part of the Métis Nation, well, that's where it all lies. But self-sufficiency also starts in the regions. Right now, the only decentralized region is Region 1. All the other regions are centralized, and they aren't happy. But you know, I've heard it said a few times during the forums that they weren't capable of running their own funds. Well, sure, but that's what the HRDC, the ARDA agreement is for, is to train people to run those funds.
Yeah.
If you don't have self-sufficiency in the regions, what have you got? You've got nothing. You've got just a bunch of people running around doing nothing. I mean, what can they do? Everybody wants to get involved one way or another. And that's the only way to do it, is to give these people autonomy. And give the regions a ton of help them out. We don't, MNBC is the umbrella, and these people do their work. And I know for a fact that everybody in this province wants to do something. They all want to be a part of this. But you can't be a part of something if you've got nothing to be a part of.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, would you liken the MNBC as sort of like the hub, and then the spoke? Would be everybody that would be doing everything like around the hub.
Well, it'd be something like that, but that's again, that's a bit more like centralized again. See, what we should be doing really is guiding the regions to be self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in 1996, when we started the Métis Provincial Council of British Columbia, we had a vision. The vision was that each region would have a building of their own, where everything was encompassed into one. Health and welfare, child and family services, the whole nine yards would be in one building, so people want to come, they go there. They don't have to call this person and that person. There's an office right there, and everybody's in there. That was the dream. And it hasn't happened. It's not even close to that. And we're still, I mean, last time I looked at the books, we were $1.3 million in the hole. So I don't know where, I don't understand it with 5,000 members and we're that far in the hole. I just don't get it, but I guess I'll find out when and if I'm president. I'll have to figure out where I can help and what I can do. And
how you can help balance the book somehow.
And change things, yes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's all basically I can really say.
Mm-hmm.
For now, anyway, until I see what's going on, you know. More we can do, I know that.
Yeah, that's true. Well, at least you know what you have in mind, and you have to just see if you can put that into effect.
Well, that's the intent, and, you know, if the board agrees, and then we work at something that's going to help everybody, not just
right.
The chosen few or select few, and I know it's not really that way, but... The fact is that how, what other way can there be if there's $12 million and 5,000, 6,000 members? I don't get it. And besides, this member stuff, it really bothers me. I don't like this member slogan. It sounds like more like a union than it does a nation of people. But I guess until we find a better word, we're stuck with member, I guess.
Yeah, right. Now, Earl, what about the Métis survivors, the residential school survivors? Now, how can the Métis Nation of BC and you as president address their needs?
That's a difficult question because I can tell you my mother was in residential school. And when I told her, I said, you know, Mom, you're entitled to something. You're entitled to whatever it is, even if it's only money. And I'm not saying that to be facetious, only money. I'm just saying that because, really, if you've been hurt, what the heck is money worth? You know, it's not worth anything. It's your pride that's been let. Your pride's been taken away. Your culture's been taken away. You don't really know who you are anymore. And you're all mixed up, you know. And my mother is 74, I believe. And, you know, Earl, she says, I don't want to go back to those days because they hurt too much.
Yeah.
So she says they can have their money and they can have whatever they see, and that's just it. And when I was home this past summer there, and Mr. Harper there and everybody apologized, so we had a little chat about that. And after we were done, I thought to myself, you know, they can apologize all they want because they weren't there. It's the people that did all the damage that should be apologizing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's never going to happen. So their apology to me isn't worth the paper it's written on. I realize that they're trying, but what good is that today? But these people that need the help, pardon me?
Yeah. No, I was going to say, what about, you know, organizations to help the healing?
I was just about to say that. You know, Wayne Lucier here, he's been involved in that sort of thing now for 20 years, I believe. And we need people like Wayne Lucier in here simply because any man or any woman or any person, for that matter, that can stop doing the things that he did and help others, to me, is a credit to our society. I mean, how many people do you know that go out and do things that they shouldn't be doing, and yet they can't stop themselves? This guy did. This guy, in my view, I have to have respect for people that can stop doing the things that they're used to doing, and they're stuck with it, like it's a habit or whatever the case may be.
I mean,
I have a lot of respect for people like that. The ones that I have, it's not that I disrespect them by doing it, it's just that they have the guts to stop doing it. And
yes,
this guy's
right.
Up 20 years and he's still working at it and he's helping people on the streets and he's, what else do you want in office? Somebody that helps? That's the whole intent, to help the people. And this idea of these residential school people that are having a hard time, that's the guy that could probably turn around and set up a committee to be able to fight for these people. And they need help. There's no doubt about it.
They need help.
And in my view, there's nobody better, or there probably is some people that are just as qualified. But Wayne Lucier, in my view, is the man.
Well, I know that there are various organizations coming now that are trying to do that with the total Aboriginal community as a whole, but it would be nice to see our own provincial government, the Métis Nation of BC, be involved I don't know about necessarily setting up, but at least supporting such groups.
Oh, absolutely, and that's the intent. At least that was the intent in 1996, is to help these regions build these sort of entities. But
great,
you know,
yeah, it's a good idea. Yeah, because
I'm hoping,
if you
sorry,
No, I was just going to say, if you did it in each region, if each region had their own center, then people would have somewhere to go in their areas.
Well, there's an old saying, you know, if you build something, people will come.
Yeah.
Right now, it's but nothing, and people have nowhere to go.
That's true.
Every one of those centers, you know, it would be a place for the elders and the veterans and whoever to collect.
Yeah.
What's wrong with having a little coffee shop in there where they can come and have coffee in the morning and talk about things?
Yeah.
And the youth
mm-hmm.
can go through, you know, and learn from these elders and the veterans.
That's true.
Anyway.
And what about the elders and veterans? You know, you'd like to... How would you like to see them play a more active and vital role for the Métis Nation in BC?
Well, those people, in my view, are role models. They've been through thick and thin, and I'll venture to say that every one of those people were very poor at one time. And
mm-hmm.
I know we were, and if they were anything like what we were, they have a lot to say. And, you know, they were the ones with the horses and carriages and the whole nine yards, and those days are gone. But the youth need to, you just can't bury that past. The youth need to understand that actually happened, because they don't even see a horse anymore. I know, how many youth even seen a cow? You know,
I mean,
it's not there anymore.
No.
Especially around here. So... These people sit down with youth, they discuss things, you know, and even children, eh? And the veterans, well, what better people, what better role models can you have but veterans? It just boggles my mind that these people aren't being utilized. Elders and veterans with the youth, you know, sitting down with the kids, especially young children, and asking them, you know, the kids ask them questions, they're answering their questions, it goes on, and that's how you learn.
Mm-hmm.
I remember as a kid, I never hung around with kids my age. I wanted to learn things, so I always hung around with people a little bit older than me. They knew more. And but I don't know. That's really what I'd like to see their role in. Now, also advice from them, because mm-hmm. they see what's going on. And you know, they're a little bit quieter than we are, and they sit back and they just look and they listen and then they come up with a conclusion. You know. And that's a smart way of doing things. You know, don't talk, listen. But unfortunately, as a politician, I'm stuck with talking. So, I'm depending on them for help.
Well, you know, as advisors, I think that's a good idea. Have a
committee
of elders that are advisors, right?
That's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea.
Yeah. I'm going to just say right now, that any of you in the listening audience that wish to call in any questions or comments for Earl, as a reminder, the call-in numbers are as follows. In Canada and the U.S., toll-free 888-228-4494 and worldwide toll-free 877-489-6350. And Earl would welcome any questions or comments if you'd like to give a call.
You know, speaking of veterans, I had four uncles in the war. And my dad was way too young to go to war, so they all went. And two of them ended up in concentration camps. My Uncle George from Strasburg, Saskatchewan, just died here about, I think it was 6 years ago or so. And he never talked about the war. But to the past... I guess it must have been about 5 or so years before he did pass away. He started talking about the wars and things that he went through. He was in a concentration camp for over 2 years. And there was something in the neighborhood of, 1,200, I guess. And out of 1,200, only 160 survived. But they built that airport, or I should say the runway that goes into the ocean in Japan. I believe
mm-hmm.
it was. They built that by hand, all those war vets. So, no, it wasn't a very pretty thing. So these guys can tell you all kinds of stories. And they aren't really stories, they're facts. Because they don't want to brag about nothing. So they just tell you the way it is. Very respectful.
Yeah.
But anyway.
It's too bad that, you know, a lot of them were not looked after, you know, during their declining years.
Well, they weren't, and they still aren't. As a matter of fact, there's an old vet that's 85 years old now, and he tried to get his Métis card, but because the church in the community that he was born in had burnt down, his records went with it, so he can't get his long-form birth certificate, or doesn't know how, one or the other, and he was denied his Métis card because he can't do that. Well, just a minute here. This guy went to war as a Métis, came back as a Métis, and now he's not a Métis.
Yeah,
according
that's...
to the card.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
No, that doesn't at all.
I mean, these people, they fought, they went through hell, quite frankly, and they need respect, and they should have respect, and that's my intent.
Mm-hmm. Good. Earl, I just wanted to ask you, were you actually at the round table of discussions in Ottawa regarding the Aboriginal Apprenticeship Board? And if you were, can you tell us how that went or what that was all about?
Well, it really wasn't a round table. What it was the Aboriginal People's Commission of Canada.
Okay.
And what the commission does is pass policy for the Federal Liberal Party of Canada. Now, the reason I was doing that is because they're the only party in Canada that recognizes an Aboriginal People's Commission to the extent that they do.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, I simply passed a policy for all the Aboriginal people involving an Aboriginal Apprenticeship Board. And the intent of that is to, for lack of a better word at this point in time, something like a union, if you like.
Earl, hang on for a second. We may have a caller. Hang on just for a second. Do we have a caller? Hello? Do we have a caller? Earl, are you there?
I'm still here.
Okay, go ahead. I thought we had a caller, but that's fine. Go ahead. Sorry.
I guess people are just listening tonight instead of calling.
Yeah, I thought I heard, though, a ring, kind of a ding. So, but that's fine.
All right. Anyway,
okay.
The intent of the Aboriginal Apprenticeship Board is to mentor the apprentices into trades, eh? And because a lot of them, they can't go to an employer and ask them if they need apprentices, and they can't find their own job, really.
Mm-hmm.
And to keep them in their own community, so we have to partner up with whoever is doing a project, either on the reserve or in the Métis community or Inuit community. It doesn't make any difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just to put these people to work. And
we do have a caller, Earl. We do have a caller. Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi,
can I have your name?
Yeah, it's Corey. I'm Earl's son.
Oh, hi, Corey.
Oh, Earl's son. Okay,
yeah,
what do you want to ask your dad?
Well, I just wanted to tell him that I'm online right now doing a bit of campaigning for him, and it looks like I got him a couple of votes, and I just wanted to tell you, Dad, that I love you and I support you, and I think you're doing a good job, so keep it up.
Well, thank
cool.
you very much. That means a lot.
You're a good son. Go back.
Well, good luck, Dad. I'll see you at the polls tomorrow.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks for calling, hon.
Well, that was nice.
That was nice, Earl.
It'd be,
to have your own son supportive of you. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, we have another caller, Earl. Okay, caller, hello?
Yeah, hello?
Hello, and what is your name, please?
My name is Renee Brew.
Hello, Renee! So what would you like? What would you like? This is...
Dr. Earl.
Yeah, this is the girl Dale.
That's the Dale's wife?
Yeah, this is the girl Dale.
The girl Dale, okay, how are you?
Good, thanks. What question did you want to ask, Earl? Did you want to make a comment?
I want to ask him if we're going to have cream midget or French midget. What they're going to teach?
Well, I guess the way it's going right now is they're teaching Cree, but I don't understand that Cree stuff. I'm a French Michif, and I think there's very few people that even speak French anymore. But in reality, everything was from Quebec, from what I'm gathering. And Louis Riel spoke French, Gabriel Dumont spoke French. They all did, even a bit of Cree, but it was all a mixture. I don't think... I'm not going to insult the Cree language, but to me, it was all part of French. So we'll have to discuss that, René, when the time comes. And I think the best part of it, is, in my view, should be French Michif. But the board could change that, and but we'll have to work on it. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
So is that a good answer, René?
Yes.
Good. So thanks for phoning in, my friend.
Okay, that's it.
Bye,
John, me, Chip.
All right.
Okay,
no. All right, talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for calling. Yeah, bye-bye. So, Earl.
Yeah.
Earl. Yeah, we were talking about now this apprenticeship. Now, you know that Dale is taking a course right now.
Yes,
he's a mentor, you see. Sorry?
He would be a mentor.
Well, what he's taking is called an instructor's course for his glazing work. He's learning how to be an instructor. And he also has in mind of teaching the young people a trade.
Yes.
That's why he's doing this.
And that's the intent. I mean, you know, even if, for example, let's say I'm not the president and the MNBC is still running and they want to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how to teach. So if the MNBC wants to teach me to be a mentor to these kids, that's the intent. And the intent for any journeyman to turn around and do that. You see, I've been in the trade now for 40 years and I've worked with all of Bruce's brothers, every one of them. They're all pipers. And I've worked with them all, and I know that when I started Medco, I even spoke to Bruce's brother, Herb, and asked him if he'd be interested in being a mentor for us, because he lives in British Columbia now, just around Vernon there. And I can tell you, you wouldn't have a better mentor than Herb Dumont. He's an excellent guy and hell of a hard worker, pardon the language. And I've worked for him on many, many jobs, and he's worked for me. And we get along really well. Right now, I think he's working in Alberta again, but he's retired. The guy's 70 years old, for crying out loud, and he's still out there giving her.
He's
been an excellent mentor, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. And see, that's one of Dale's dreams, is to go into Aboriginal and Métis communities and teach the young people who want to learn a trade.
Yeah. That's the intent. That's the whole intent of the Aboriginal Apprenticeship Board, but it'll be all of Canada encompassing. And the reason for that is it keeps Canada together. There was kind of a twofold situation, and I spoke to Paul Martin about that when I first brought it up when he was in office. And he agreed, quite frankly. As a matter of fact, he was very supportive. And the intent was to we're a federal responsibility. So why do we need two tickets? First, you got to get a provincial ticket. Then you write if you get over a certain amount or you write again, I forget how it works now. It's been so long for me. And then you get your interprovincial, which is the red seal is what they call it. Then you're an interprovincial journeyman. Then you can travel anywhere in Canada or the United States and you can work as a journeyman. But the fact remains is that we as Aboriginal people are a federal responsibility. So why don't we just write our interprovincial tickets, be part of the Aboriginal Apprenticeship Board, and travel freely like we used to?
Yeah.
That was the intent of this. And to top it off, the other part of it was that if the Cree and the Saulteaux nations of Quebec, of the northern part of Quebec, they want to build these big dams around James Bay, etc., if they become part of this organization, and we do put them to work and find work, I don't think they'd be willing to separate too quickly with the rest of Quebec. So it would also save the nation, the Canadian nation, And, you know, I know it sounds kind of far-fetched, but believe it or not, the politicians in Ottawa liked the idea. So, and if the MNC would have kept going there in 2000, we may be there already. Who knows? But,
Yeah. It's funny, you know, with Dale going back to school, because he never liked school. And I said to his mom and sister, I said, who knew? You know,
who knew?
Happened to him.
Well, I didn't like school either. When I was 15, my dad says, you don't want to go to school, you're going to work. And that's how I started my plumbing trade until I was 15. One day he says to me, you know, he says, you're so dumb. He says, you're only going to be a plumber all your life. He says, well, now I've got 17 certificates, and you can't say that no more.
Oh, and besides, plumbers, you know, they're you know, very valued.
Well, they really weren't at the time.
Yeah.
It was a trade then, too. Now everybody figures a plastic pipe, you glue it, put it together. In those days, it was lead and oakum, hub joints, and copper pipe, and soldering, silver foil. Oh, yeah, it was altogether a different trade.
Yeah, it was a different, totally different ball game.
Yeah.
I think Dale realizes that in the glazing industry, too, you know, how it's more, you know, it's not the same as what they were taught when, you know, before.
Even in the industrial trades as a pipe fitter, everything is different. It isn't the same at all anymore. And that's what I've been doing now mostly for the past, 25, maybe 30 years is industrial work. Working in refineries, pulp mills, etc. So like I said, I spent 22 years in construction before I came to the mill here in Crofton, and I've been here for 18 now. So it's been a little over 40 years in the trade. So I have a lot to offer.
Yeah.
And we'll get it done yet.
Oh, yeah.
I hope we do before I die.
Oh, well, you're going to live for a while, Earl. Don't worry about that.
No, I meant taking so long, it seems like it'll take forever.
You know what, Earl? You'll be there when you're there. You'll be at the right place at the right time, Earl. That's the way it works.
I hope so.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to ask you on a personal note. You volunteered willingly and donated your time and money to various organizations and causes. Can you please tell us more about this, the different things that you've done in the community?
Well, it's
your involvement.
Yeah, it's all kinds of different things. I get involved when it comes time for helping people. I mean, I got a soft heart for people that are in need. For some reason, I've always been that way. I support the underdog. I mean, you know, even if they deserve where they're at. In my view, they still need a boost and some help. I mean, everybody gets in a bad situation once in a while. All they need is a little bit of support just to get them back on their feet again. And I've always been that way. And, you know, the United Way, for example, in the Cowichan Valley, I've been involved since I started at the mill here in 1990. And more so, I guess, in the past few years, you know, we've collected over $70,000 at the mills and in Crofton here, although now it's going to be a little tougher simply because they're talking layoffs, etc., so people aren't really all that willing to donate.
No.
And I also help out at the Royal Canadian Regiment. Mind you, I haven't done that for a little while now, but I was in Korea, I think it was 3 years ago now. The Korean government, you see, my biological father was killed in Korea in 1952 when I was 6 months old. So they flew my wife and I over there to go visit the grave and do a military ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was four Canadians and the rest were from all over the world. So that was a very interesting visit, you could say, because my mother had told me about it, but I didn't really know. And then here I was in Korea, in front of his grave, so that was an interesting part. And this, I guess, is one of the reasons why the veterans are so close to my heart.
Yeah,
I have firsthand experience of what wars do to people. But anyway, I still work with them. I volunteer. I'm a lifetime member of the Royal Canadian Regiment. And the legions, I simply help out there whenever I can. Simply, again, it's for the veterans, and I do what I can with them. And being the president of the Aboriginal People's Commission, then if that's a volunteer position, they don't get paid. Many times you use your own dollars to run around and do your thing, and it does get very expensive at times, but it's policy, Métis rights policy, for example, that we pushed in 2002 in Ottawa. That was a policy for the Federal Liberal Party of Canada, and then we got to make it law out of government. See, stuff like that. And if you don't start from the bottom up, you can't start. They won't talk to you if you start from the top. You got to start from the bottom and work it all the way up, because they have patterns, and those patterns you have to follow whether you like them or not.
Mm-hmm.
And the apprenticeship and oh shucks, there's all kinds of repatriation, and I think British Columbia has passed more policies in Ottawa, Aboriginal policies that is, than any other province in Canada, and we've done that now since 1998. And when Buddy Rekelma was at the helm here, he's a chief of the Qualicum Band, was a chief. He died here a few years back. That's the guy that got me involved with this. And to this day, I'm mad at him.
Sorry. Oh, yeah.
Because it's a tough job, I can tell you. And it's very, at times, it's very stressful. But most of all, it's very expensive. If I fly to Ottawa or Montreal, they pay for that. But, you know, it takes me 45 days to get my expense check of the money I'd already put out. And that's
yeah.
how that operates.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Red River West, well, I think most people know that story. Four founders, Richard Larson, Al Larson, Bruce Dumont, and myself. And we started that in the valley, and it's going to go again next year. We are working on it now. Matter of fact, mm-hmm. Trish and I are discussing what's going to be happening in the future with that. And it's going to happen, so I'm looking forward to that.
Good. What happened this year?
Well, this year it was part and parcel with this Indigenous Games.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
You know, I mean, I don't know. I would have rather have it go, but I didn't really have a say to that. And, I was too busy doing other things to be involved with it. But this year will be a different story, or next year, I should say. And, that was the idea. It was to not take the wind, I guess, out of the Indigenous Games was the reasoning behind it. I don't know how, but it doesn't matter. I think they made the right decision. Since the decision was made, that's the right decision. Simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
And the North American Indigenous Games was a very exciting time. I was part of, oh, brother, I tell you, I was bounced around from... from basketball to baseball to football to traffic coordinator. Oh, brother. But it was a lot of fun. It was a blast.
That was my question.
Yeah, and there again, you see, that's a donation as well, because I had to take a week off holidays, which belongs to my family, you know. But they understood. And like I say, anybody that's a volunteer understands what I'm talking about. Because
mm-hmm.
everything you do costs you something.
Yeah.
Whether it be fuel, whether it be holidays, or whether it be a floater, or whatever the case may be, it costs
yeah,
you.
Yeah, we know that.
So there you go, you see. So,
yeah.
And you'll never recuperate except what's in your heart. You feel good
yeah.
about it. I know I do. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it.
Of course. It's worthwhile to you.
Yeah, that's right. And it's the
yeah.
same thing with what I'm doing right now with the Métis Nation of British Columbia with these policies. Nobody else is pushing Aboriginal policy out there for the Métis people.
Mm.
There's nobody. All they do is go to Ottawa and talk about it. That's not good enough.
No.
You got to have policy in there for them to operate properly. So you can talk all you want till you're blue in the face, but if there's no policy, there's no goal.
Mm-hmm.
They'll just give you a carrot or two just to get rid of you. So, but... that's the way all government works, policy.
Yeah.
And
would you like...
Sorry?
No, I was going to say, would you like to see the Métis people represented at the 2010 Games?
Oh, they will be. according to Mr. Dumont, they will be represented right at the front, and that's a good thing, and that's much appreciated too, because we have to be there, otherwise we're all going to be forgotten. And
right.
But we do need more people involved. It's as simple as that. And how we're going to do that, I have no idea, because I don't think we have the funds for that, to bring people over there to help them get involved, because who the heck's going to go to Whistler and pay that kind of money for a hotel room? I know it won't be me.
These are the winter games too, aren't they? So we can't even set up teepees.
well, there you go, you see.
Yeah, or traps. Huh?
Let's get some heaters and put them in.
Yeah, or trapper's tents or something, right?
Exactly. Yeah, but no, it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to the Winter Games, to the 2010 Olympics, and see what happens with that. But I know that the MNBC's been working very hard with that, and I'm looking forward to, whether I'm president or not, I'm looking forward to seeing the Métis up at the forefront.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, we've got a few minutes to spare here, Earl. Is there anything else that you would like the listeners to know about anything that you would like to do for the Métis people if you get elected?
Well, I'd like to see the Métis people in British Columbia and in Canada get together. I'd like to see them be as one as we'll always fight. We'll never agree. We may even hate each other. But the bottom line is we have to have a nation of people, not a club. Right
yeah.
now, in my view, that's exactly what we have. Right now, we're a funding agency. But I can tell you, I like what's happening in the Senate. The Senate, I think, is going to be a good thing. But they have to be not only at arm's length, completely independent. They have to be able to have the power to tell the president and anybody else, wait a minute, don't get in my face here. We haven't made a decision yet. Come back in a while, or whatever the case may be. But I don't know if that's the way it is today. And I do know anyone connected with the Senate, like the clerk, for example. That clerk has to be as independent as the Senate. You can't have the clerk being paid by the MNBC and then have his decision overturned, or don't worry about this appeal, go someplace else. I mean, certainly that may not be happening, but the possibility is still there. And that's not right. And there's a whole bunch of number of things. Self-government is starting, but it sure isn't here yet, I can tell you. We've had our problems in this election, and there's a lot of glitches. But I can tell you, I sure do like what's going on. I really do. There's a lot of good stuff happening, and I tell you, I've been in elections now since 1992, I believe, and we're working with the Métis Council. For example, in '92 was the Métis Nation of British Columbia, and with Rick Poitras and Ken Fisher and the Brownings and Terry Nicholas, Dan LaFrance, Jack McDonald, all those people. If I've forgotten anybody, I'm sorry. But in those days, we had a different vision. It was the same vision now as having a building, et cetera, et cetera. But it's this self-government was just talked about. Now at least it started. And it's just like this Métis Act and the Constitution. If you don't start something, you can't progress with it. You can't change it, and you can't move ahead. So you have to start something in order to move ahead with it. And and I appreciate what's been done so far in this with the self-governance, in particular the Senate. I had a conference call with the Senate today, and I really did enjoy their questions because they are very, not just precise, they're good at what they do. In other words, I think they're a really good crowd. I do appreciate everything that they've done, or they're doing, for that matter.
Good.
Lots of stuff.
Well, Earl, listen, I want to thank you very, very much for being here on the Métis Voices radio show with me and chatting with all of us. And we wish you well tomorrow in this election, as well as your vice presidential running mate, Wayne Lucier, who we've had on the show as well. And Dale and I want to thank you, the listeners, for tuning in, and Don, Seth, and the crew, as well as the sponsors of the BBS radio station, for allowing us to present this program to you each week. So, Earl, again, thank you for coming on. And well, we made it through, my friend.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we did okay.
Yeah, we did okay. All right. And for those out there listening in, remember, please send feedback about our Métis Voices radio show and any suggestions for future guests that you would like to see be interviewed. We would like to hear from you. BBS Radio homepage, column left-hand side, and also be sure to visit the museum website at www.machifmetismuseum.org and join our community site and meet your distant or not so distant cousins at the Machif Métis Trading Post at http://machifmetismuseum.ning.com. Now next week, we will be playing the May 30th archive show with our good friend Claude Aubin, talking about the Métis Nation in Quebec, which we were mentioning tonight. As I will be going with Mr. Dale to Kelowna, while he's learning, I will be relaxing and even perhaps have a nice swim in the pool. So please tune in next week, same time, starting at 7:55 p.m. PST. And thank you very much for being here.